This is the Improve Photography Podcast, episode number 154. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Improve Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Harmer, and today I'm joined by Nick Page. Hey, Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, Merry Christmas to everybody, and thank you for joining us again. We appreciate your download. Today, we are going to talk all about the best lenses for portrait photography, and I want to make a shout out to the Portrait Session podcast. If you're new to Improve Photography, you've missed out on a lot of what we do. We have other podcasts on the Improve Photography Network, and Portrait Session is hosted by Erica Kay and Nick Page, and they talk all about portrait photography. And your episode this week was really cool about giving back using portrait photography. Tell us a little bit about some of the takeaways if people have missed that episode.
Yeah, so we just kind of talked a little bit about some of the things that we do to give back to the communities we live in. As photographers, we don't realize how much we have to give and how people actually appreciate the things that we have to give. To us, it doesn't seem like a really big deal to go and snap somebody's photo, but there's so many different situations where it's just really meaningful. Like one of the things that I do every year is I do lots of senior portraits, and usually every year I kind of get a good feel for who can and cannot afford the portraits. And when I know that there's a senior that would be really appreciative, but just cannot afford the photos, I do a couple senior photos for free. We talked about lots of different things that we do to kind of donate our time, give back to the communities. And it makes you feel so good when you feel like you've done something important. And so we kind of talked a little bit about that this week.
Yeah, it does. And I find that anytime I'm kind of getting kind of bogged down with work of any kind, whatever your job is. Mm-hmm. And for all of us, our hobby at least is photography. If you kind of feel like you're in a rut or kind of getting bogged down, or you just don't love photography like you did at some point, something like this can really change the way that you look at your own job or your own hobby. Mm-hmm. Is to find a way to give back. I recently have given away a fine art photo to somebody who needed it for a Christmas present. And also Improve Photography had a chance. It was really cool. In doing our workshop to Iceland, we saved the last seat for a college student, and then Improve Photography paid for a college student, all expenses paid, to come to the Iceland workshop. And you know, it does just make you mm-hmm. kind of look at everything a little bit differently when you're not just working for your paycheck, when you're working like, hey, you know, if I, you know, hurry up with this job, I'd have a little extra time. I could go help somebody out or something. Like, I don't know. It really makes you love photography again. So that's been pretty neat.
Right. One of the things that I talked a little bit about is that I make sure to donate prints to various, you know, charity auctions throughout the year. And what's so cool about that is that I can take this print that maybe cost me $50 to print, and I donate it to this auction, and sometimes they go for $500 and $600. And if I can, you know, take 50 of my own dollars and multiply it 10 times for a good cause, that is like the best thing in the world. So try to find ways to give back, you know, whether you're a landscape photographer and you have prints, or you're a portrait photographer and you have some time to donate. It just makes you feel good when you finally take the time to do it.
Yeah, I often hear photographers talking about, you know, never giving your work away for free. And while there's certainly the case mm-hmm. For, you know, not undervaluing yourself, that's definitely not something you want to do. If you never give anything away right. for free and you're only keeping to yourself, it just never quite works out. The most giving people that I know around me are also those who succeed the most. And so it's something that we all kind of have to mm-hmm. step back and remember this time of year.
Right.
And there's a lot. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and that's the thing about, like, if you own your own business, like, I know not everybody that listens to this podcast is, you know, a full-time photographer or maybe even a part-time photographer. But when you are a full-time photographer, you spend so much time just focusing on yourself, and you know, you're focusing on your marketing and your website and me. You get in this really selfish rut, and it feels very purifying to spend a little bit of time and focus on other people and giving back and stuff. So I think that's why it's so important.
It is important. And if I'm to be honest, it's also kind of hard to give well. I have tried several times, sometimes giving away things for free to help people or just to be nice. And it kind of, I regretted it later because they kind of ended up being kind of asking way too much as a client. And I kept thinking like, holy cow, you're getting in this for free. And it doesn't seem like you're being very appreciative. Or, you know, somebody asks for a photo and it's a family member, a friend. You say, oh, okay, you can have it to make a print. And then you get like a million different requests about, well, can we change this and that and the other and stuff? And it's like, hold on here. And so it's hard to give to like being willing to, but then also, or it's hard to step back and remember to do that. I think we're all willing to do it. It's just hard to like stop worrying about your business and just spend some time on helping. But it's also sometimes hard to find the right place to give to somebody who's just truly going to appreciate it. But when you can find that right combination, it really is a neat experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we could talk about this all day, but we want to talk in this episode all about portrait lenses for photography, just portrait lenses. And we have a ton of questions about this. The first one comes from Kent Dolezal, who asks, he has an 85-18, a Canon, and he shoots a crop sensor camera, and he's looking for a good second low light portrait lens. So he already has the 85-18. What would you say is the next logical choice?
Well, that 85-18 is probably the best budget portrait lens that there is. Like that's a really solid lens in itself.
Yeah, it costs what, $200, $300?
Yeah, it's like in the high 300s, and it's really sharp. It's way sharper than the 50mm, and it's just a great lens. So he's on a crop sensor, and because he's got that kind of longer portrait focal length kind of covered, he was asking if he should go with a 50, and then he's kind of debating on the 50 1.4 versus the Plastic Magic 1.8. You know, I think my recommendation would be to go a little wider than that, because you've already got the longer focal length covered, and since you're on a crop sensor, go a little wider, because you need to have those, you know, more landscape type shots anyway. So maybe go with like a 35mm. I think he said that he's got a 24 prime as well, but that particular 24 prime is an f/2.8, and it's not, you know, notoriously sharp by any means. But both Sigma and Tamron have some really good 35mm primes that are fairly fast, and I would go with one of those. The Sigma one that I was looking at is pre-art series, so it's not an art lens, which means that it's more affordable. I think it's like a $400 lens. 35mm on a crop sensor is a really useful focal length, so that would probably be my recommendation, is go a little wider than 50 and get a really good 35mm.
That's a great recommendation. I would agree with the 35, except one thing that I would caution against that I often see photographers doing is every time you get $200 or $300, you run out and buy a lens that you can buy for $200 or $300. And sometimes I look at somebody's bag that has like five lenses, and they're all like, you know, $300 lenses. Yeah, and true. Like the 85, awesome lens. 35, awesome lens. I'm not saying it's a bad $300 purchase. Those are awesome lenses at great prices. But sometimes I see this bag full of lenses that were inexpensive, and I think, how about we sell like five of these and buy a 24 to 70, or buy a 70 to 200? Because as I talk to professional photographers, and the way that I like to shoot, like everybody's shooting the 24 to 70 and the 70 to 200. And so I just don't want to encourage people to proliferate lenses and avoid the big guns. If you know that that's in your future sometime, maybe save up a couple lens purchases to do that. The 35 is a great lens, and it's much less expensive. And so that, if that's what you can do, that's great. I just want to make sure you kind of have a roadmap on where you're spending your money, so you don't waste a whole bunch on small things.
Right. I think we tend to kind of nickel and dime ourselves sometimes. Like, we buy so many of the little things that we could have bought one of the big things. This kind of reminds me of those kits that you see on Amazon, where you get the camera body, you get the kit lens, and then you get a million accessories that you'll never use.
Filters and lens wipes, right, and cheap, like, tripod and terrible backpack.
Yeah, every colored filter you could ever not want. So we tend to kind of nickel and dime ourselves. So a lot of times you're better to just save your money. Don't buy that little accessory that you're probably not going to use anyway, and save up for a lens that people will actually be able to tell the difference in your photography. One of the things that I always try to make sure that I'm doing is, if I'm going to be spending a lot of money, are other people looking at my photos going to even be able to tell? You know, mm-hmm. a lot of times a new lens, they will be able to tell because, you know, that's a different perspective, or it's a little sharper than it used to be. You know, if it's another camera bag, nobody's going to tell. So, you know, try to see if it's actually going to open something up for you in photography or improve your photography in some kind of way.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was just having this conversation with my wife the other day. We were looking at what we've spent during the year, kind of starting to put everything together for taxes already. And I just looked around the office and I could count so many items mm-hmm. that I paid double for because I tried to save a couple bucks. Camera bags that I bought that were cheap as I was kind of growing in my gear. And now I've bought much better bags now. And so I just never use that. Or just last week, I was buying new video cameras for the office and I saw one that was $200. And I said, hey, it does 1080p. I'm buying it. And then it didn't have some of the features that I needed to start it remotely from my desk. And I wanted to do that so I don't have to like climb on chairs and start 5 different video cameras around the room before every single video. Mm-hmm. And so I realized, oh man, there's another $200 that if I would have just bought the big one right from the start, I wouldn't have ended up paying double because now I've bought several junkier ones kind of stepping up. So, you know, I'm not saying everybody needs to spend $1 million on photography. You all know if there's a way to save money, I'm going to find it on gear. But I will say that you want to be careful that you're not actually paying double because you're being frugal. And it just depends on where you want to end up with your lenses. For a lot of photographers who this is a hobbyist and aren't made of gold, $300 lenses, getting several $300 lenses are going to produce great results for you. And that's probably all you're ever going to need. And so that's awesome. I just want you to see that, you know, I'm going to be spending a lot of money on photography, then at least have that in the plans.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Another question we got this week is if we buy used lenses, I know you do, Nick, don't you?
Yeah, I've bought, I would say half of my lenses have been bought used and the other half have been bought not used. As I look at the shelf, I can't tell the difference anymore because I beat up the new ones. Either that or I throw them off cliffs. But yeah, I've bought used and I really haven't had too many bad experiences, although I did just have a macro lens die on me. And that was one of those Craigslist specials that it was a great deal. It lasted me for a couple years and I'm content with it, but it finally died. So yeah.
Well, not too bad. Yeah. I buy used as well. In fact, when I look on Amazon for almost any lens in the $1,000 range, you can buy it for $250 off if you buy it used. And a lot of them are still, you know, like it's just open box. It's still like new. It's just used. So on Amazon, always check on that right hand side, the little box that says to look at the used ones. Often you can find some great deals. I've only been burned, I think, twice, and both of them really were my fault. I could have avoided being burned on it if I would have really, you know, put it through the ringer, really tested it well in the first 2 weeks when I got it, so I still had time to return. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I always check for is that it has Prime shipping to me. Not so much because I have to have it in 2 days, but also if it's Prime shipping, they're usually much bigger sellers that are going to have a reasonable return policy, or it's from Amazon itself. Usually it is from Amazon if it's Prime. And so so then you don't get stuck with, you know, Bob the seller who says, there's nothing wrong with this lens. And you're like, yeah, actually it does need to focus, you know, and exactly. you don't want to be in that kind of situation. So I always buy used, but only if I can get the Prime shipping, because then I usually find that that's either from Amazon itself or from a very mm-hmm. reputable dealer.
And, you know, a couple things anytime you're going to be buying a used lens is comb through the photos that they post of the lenses really carefully. Like really take a look at that front element and make sure it doesn't have a big scratch across the front of it. You know, just little things like anything that you can see cosmetically. It's okay if it's got some cosmetic wear and tear on it, but it kind of depends on where that wear and tear is happening. Ideally, you don't want to buy from somebody like me, where I've been taking it to the ocean regularly and dousing it in salt water, things like that you want to avoid. So look for those descriptions where it says it's been in a studio or it's barely been used. You know, try to buy those newer looking lenses that hopefully have not been, you know, dropped and thrown in the ocean, stuff like that.
Yeah. And I guess this isn't specific to lenses, but with cameras, you can of course check the actual shutter count, how many shutter actuations the camera has taken. The reason that I check that has nothing to do with the shutter itself. Most cameras are rated to, you know, 150, sometimes 300,000 shutter actuations. And usually the shutter goes far past that. And frankly, replacing the shutter isn't terribly expensive usually anyway. So I'm not really concerned about the shutter. The reason that I ask is I want to know how much use the camera has seen, because things do wear out on a camera, but I'm not concerned about the shutter itself. So that's one way that you can at least get an idea, but there's nothing like that for a lens. There's not like a, how many pictures is this sucker taken kind of thing. Have you ever scratched a lens? Had a scratch lens, or have you ever actually done the scratching to a lens? I know you've destroyed one, but have you ever scratched one?
Yeah, that one is definitely scratched. I couldn't even find the glass for it. So
after it fell down a cliff, there was a little scratch.
You know, so I tried really hard to scratch that old 16-35, like when walking through events, like shooting weddings and stuff, and I'd have it on my Black Rapid strap, and it would, you know, be kind of bouncing around, and the front element would be like brushing against my belt or like bumping into things. Walking with it on a tripod over my shoulder and like walking through brush and stuff, like I definitely gave myself plenty of opportunities to scratch it, but I never really did. If you have a decent lens, obviously that was an L lens, the fancier the lens, the better the coatings are on the front element and stuff. If you have a decent lens, they're pretty hard to scratch. You got to work at it. And I worked at it and I still never did. But that's not to say that you couldn't do it with your own lens. So don't go out and do the things that I'm doing. Don't say Nick said I could. I tried really hard and I was never able to scratch one. How about you, Jim?
Yeah, well, I said the other day that I've never scratched a lens, but I actually remembered after the podcast that I did scratch my very first lens. And so I think this is more of a concern for the less expensive lenses that maybe don't have as good of a coating on that front element, or that have plastic elements and it's not glass. So, you know, something like a kit lens, for example, is probably going to be a lot more likely to get scratched. Yeah. But when I did scratch it, there's no way you could tell in the photo. And I don't have an example on improvephotography.com, but if you would just Google like scratched lens examples, you can't even tell. In fact, I've seen photos from a lens where the front element was like seriously smashed, and it really just cut down the contrast a little bit. It was still fine.
It just turned into a creative choice at that point.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, anyway, so it's not something that I really worry about. In fact, I clean the front element of my lens off all the time with my shirt, and I've never scratched it. So I don't know. I don't worry about it too much. I guess I'm like you. I probably should take better care than I do. But I mean, I've been doing it for years and it's never caused a problem. And so I have a hard time panicking about it.
Of course, you're the same guy that like the first thing he does is lose his lens caps. And you don't even put lens caps on your lenses when you put it in your bag, do you?
No, I don't even pretend to try with the lens caps. They're just gone. They're just gone. Every time I sell a lens, I think, oh man, now I've got to go buy a couple lens caps to put on this thing. I should keep them in a good spot so I can sell it with a lens cap. Anyway, prime versus zoom with portrait lenses. For me personally, I really prefer zooms. I mean, it feels to me like I have so much more versatility with the zoom, whereas with a prime, I'm exchanging a large amount of versatility for maybe sometimes in some cases 5% of sharpness. And for me, that's not a worthwhile trade. How about you?
I'm a zoom guy too. And most of that just comes from the fear of not having the right lens on at the right time. When I'm shooting events and stuff, I can't really risk it. I need to know that I'm going to have the right focal length with me. And so I'm zooms most of the time. Mostly because I'm a control freak. But if I was like only doing portraits, I would love to just work with nothing but primes, because primes, you can typically get a shallower depth of field in most cases. They're a little bit sharper when you stop them down. They let in a little bit more light. They're small and light and nice to use. That, like we were talking a little bit earlier about that 85-1.8. That was what I had before I had my nice 70-200. And now that I have my nice 70-200, I use it for everything. But there are times that I miss having that small, light, little, wonderful thing on the front of my camera because the primes typically are just so small and light and nice to use. So if I was doing more like portraits where stuff wasn't going to be moving, I didn't have to react to what's going on around me quite as much, I would use primes more than I do.
Very good. Yeah. And I know there are some people that just love it. The one thing that I very strongly disagree when people are touting the primes, and I agree, there are some great primes out there. The 85-1.8 is one that I really need to buy. I mean, that's a great lens. For Fuji, it's the 56 is the equivalent of the 85. Mm-hmm. And I really would like that lens. So there are definitely primes that make a lot of sense to me. But I just like the zoom. And every time I hear somebody say, well, just zoom with your feet, I always say, that is not the same thing at all. So if you haven't seen the difference, let me explain kind of why that doesn't work. So let's say I'm taking, miraculously, from Boise, Idaho, I'm taking a picture of Nick Page, right, in Washington. So we're standing next to each other and I'm going to take a picture of you. If I am at, let's say I'm at really wide, I'm at 15 millimeters on a full frame camera. I'm very wide. Well, it's going to, even if I'm very close to Nick can be large in the frame. I can show him up close. But then I'm going to see a large amount of scenery beside him and in the back. I have that wide angle of view. And so, yes, what I have done is with this prime lens, I have scooted in and I still made Nick big in the frame. But that's not the same as zooming, because if I were to step back and zoom in on Nick, now I don't have this wide area. I have a narrow background. I'm only getting a tiny little chunk of the background. Mm-hmm. And so it's easier to blur out because we have a longer focal length, and it's easier to find a clean background when it's small. When you're shooting too wide and we've scooted in, one, it distorts Nick's features on his face, and two, it's just going to show too much out there. And so there's a good chance there's going to be a car there, whatever in the background, a telephone pole. And so with a zoom, I'm able to control exactly what's in and out of the foreground and the background a lot better. Right. And so that's the reason that I generally prefer a zoom. But I mean, I'm never one to say that zoom is the only way to go. There are also great primes.
Right. And those people that say zoom with your feet, those people have never shot a Catholic wedding because you just can't zoom with your feet. For example, like when the bride and groom have just tied the knot and they're walking down the aisle, I just shot this one in this nice big Catholic cathedral, and it was such a cool spot. And because of that, I wanted to be able to show the entire room, yet still get some fairly close-up shots of them, you know, in the act of walking down and smiling at the guests and stuff. So in that particular case, I had a 28-70 on, and when they were further down the aisle, I would be shooting at 70 millimeters, and then when they got closer, I would go all the way to 28 millimeters and show as much of the room as I could to, you know, make it look big and grand. And you can't do either one of those shots with a 50 millimeter. You can't zoom with your feet when you can't get anywhere near the altar or anything. You're shooting from a mile away. So you need a 70-200 and you need something that zooms. And yeah, you can't zoom with your feet at a Catholic wedding.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about portrait lenses as well as serving your clients in photography, if that's something on your to-do list for 2016. But before we do that, we want to take a second and thank Creative Live for sponsoring this episode of Improved Photography. Creative Live is an online learning website where you can learn from classes from the industry experts on a wide variety of topics, but all things that really center around creatives. Creative Live offers great online classes to help you enhance or really dig into new skills like photography, design, music production, business savvy, anything in the creative space, they've got something for you. You can watch the classes in their massive online catalog. I mean, they have tons of classes, and there's always something streaming for free. So you can watch, if they're doing a class live, you can stream it for free and watch it, or you can purchase classes after the fact. And they, I mean, when I say the experts, they have like Lewis Howes on, you know, productivity and business, Ryan Holiday, Alex Bloomberg, photographers like Ann Geddes. There's nowhere else you're going to get a class from Ann Geddes. That's incredible that they, the content that they have. You can go to creativelive.com/improve. And at that link, you'll get 20% off any of Creative Live's classes. That's creativelive.com/improve, and that'll give you 20% off any of their classes. Join millions of students from around the world and make your living doing what you love at Creative Live. And we thank them for supporting Improve Photography. It makes a big difference for us. We have a lot more to talk about, a few more lens things that we want to chat about, and then we want to talk about serving your clients well. And the next is, like, let's say, you know, you're shooting one of your weddings, Nick. You look into your bag and you realize one of your lenses is missing. Which one is going to give you the sickest feeling in your stomach?
Well, it's definitely going to be the 70 to 200, mostly because it's the most expensive lens in the bag. That losing a $2,000 lens would make me sick for sure. But since I bought that lens, it's just on my camera all the time. If I'm doing portraits of any kind, if I'm doing people pictures.
I was going to say, what who are they?
You're right. Yeah, of
like
any
little
kind,
elf people.
Yeah, of any kind, I'm pretty much using that lens. It's just so nice because the zoom range is pretty large on a 70 to 200, so you can get kind of a full body shot, zoom in, get like a torso close up. You can get really shallow depth of field. That lens is really sharp, wide open, so you can really maximize that shallow depth of field. It's just so nice and so versatile. Like I said, I miss the small light 85 millimeter because the 70 to 200 is a beast and I don't like packing it around, but I like the results I get. So it'd definitely be that one.
Yeah. So I totally agree. The 70 200 is the lens, but like you said, $2,000. Yeah. I mean, that's ouch. Unless you're doing photography very, very seriously and this is your full-time gig, or you have a lot of disposable income to spend on your photography, that's a lens that's not gonna gonna end up in a lot of our listeners' bags. And so we want to talk for a minute about some of the alternatives to the 70 to 200. If that's not something that's ever gonna happen because you just don't want to dedicate that much money to the 70 to 200, what else is it gonna be? And one option that I want to present first is look at different camera systems. Because when you invest in a camera system, you're also investing in that lens system.
Yep.
And so it's important to look down the road and kind of see what lenses you think you'd like to end up with. And, you know, maybe you can afford today, you know, a Canon 6D and you can just barely get enough to buy that full frame camera. But then what happens when you've got to buy all your lenses and now just about all your lenses are over $1,000. Now you've kind of locked yourself into paying a ton of money to fill up your bag. Whereas if you would have chosen something maybe a little bit smaller, like a Fuji X-T1 is the one that I like, or the Micro Four Thirds systems, those systems, you can get a very high quality glass, you know, equivalent to the 70-200 range, and you're going to pay a quarter. I mean, way less than what you would in the full frame world from Canon, Nikon, wherever else. So that's one option that I think a lot more photographers probably should be looking at is the system you're in really a good fit for the amount of money you're going to be dedicating to the project?
Yeah, it all depends on what you're shooting too. Like if people photography is not going to be a large part of what you do, then, you know, you're totally fine with that 50 millimeter lens. Those are really a great focal length. If that's going to be your first lens, it's a good one. On the Canon side, I can't really speak too much about the Nikon side, but you can, Jim. The quality difference between a 50 millimeter 1.4 and a 50 millimeter 1.8, it's all about build quality between those two lenses. The 1.4 is a much better built lens, but the optics are about the same. So, you know, the image is going to look very similar in those two. But the plastic magic that is only like $150 or whatever they are, those are just not made very well. And it will someday fail on you. But you'll probably get a lot of use out of it before it does. And if people photography is not like your main, I would just go with one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would have said that renting a lens is a good option if you don't do portrait photography often. You know, you mostly do other thing, but then your long lost cousin asks you to go shoot the wedding, and you say, "Okay, I'm going to go rent a 7200." You know, there's definitely a case for that, but I will say the last few times that I priced out lenses to rent hurt when I looked at that final price tag. Renting lenses is pretty expensive sometimes. And so it doesn't always work to just say, rent it if you only do it a couple times a year. I mean, how many times do you rent it before it's kind of paid for itself? In fact, this week I priced out a Metabones adapter for Fuji to Canon, and to rent it for a week from Borrow Lenses was going to cost me the same as it was to just for only 7 days. Ooh. I was like, what in the world? And it's not just Borrow Lenses. In fact, I think Borrow Lenses is an awesome company. When I rent, I always rent from them. But I do think that the price of renting sometimes just, it's pretty high. For example, the Yellowstone trip that we're going on in a few weeks for the Improved Photography Travel Group, I was just going to buy a Canon 7D Mark II. And I got a couple lenses that I want to test out. But when I looked at, you know, I want to test them out for about 15 days and how much it was going to be to rent it, I thought, you know, it's going to be about the same if I just buy these and then sell it used. Yep. That it just, man, sometimes the rental prices are really high, but sometimes it's great. And there are a lot of great rental companies out there. It's definitely an option sometimes. Sometimes it's pretty pricey.
Yeah, it kind of depends on what the lens is and how often you use it. The lenses that I rent the most often are wildlife lenses, because really, you know, I try to justify the things that I buy. Like, are the pieces of equipment that I buy going to somehow make money back for me in my business? And wildlife lenses, they're just not going to. So it's going to be a long time before I can justify a 600 millimeter lens. So I rent those, and it depends on how long you have them and stuff. I go through BrentRentsLenses.com, and typically, like, I get the Sigma 150 to 600 millimeter, and I can rent that for like 4 days for $120. And if it's a one-time trip that, you know, I definitely want a long lens on, it's worth it to me, because if I get a couple pictures and sell a couple pictures, maybe I'll break even on it. And so that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah. And that was what really brought up the price for me on this one. Is I bought the Tamron 150 to 600 and the Sigma 150 to 600 Sport. And I'm going to do a review, see if it's worth it to pay the extra for the Sigma Sport version. But I don't have a DSLR. I sold my DSLRs and there's nothing long lens for Fuji. And so I was like, man, I've got to get a camera and two lenses. Like, this is going to hurt.
That adds up pretty fast.
Yeah, sure. It really does. It was going to be, I can't remember how much it was, but it was going to be a lot for the rental. And so I thought, I better see if there are different options. So I'm going to get them and just use them for a few months and do some wildlife shoots, and then I'll sell it. I can usually sell without losing too much money. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's going to make sense here. One thing that we have been talking about offline this week, having a little bit of a debate between us and some of the other hosts of the Improved Photography Podcast, is about giving all the photos to the client, but really not just that, but also just some of the ways that photographers choose or choose not to serve the client. So the situation is this, and it's something that every photographer kind of has to decide, is after you do a portrait photography shoot for a client, or really any shoot, an event shoot, do you give the client all of the photos that you took, give them most of the photos that they took, or do you really give them just the best work. I would say that most photographers probably just give the best work with you know, a fair number of photos, but are very selective on the photos that they provide to the client. And for me personally, I'm on the other side of the fence. I think photographers should give maybe not all the photos to the client, but just about all the photos to the client. And so that's the debate that we've been engaging in. But I don't want to like sway the jury here. What's your argument here, or how did this situation come up?
Well, I think it's safe to say that I'm going to be on the more popular side this week.
So, I think you're right.
So here's the deal. I shot a wedding, and this was early summer. I shot a wedding. I delivered the photos. I delivered 474 photos for 6 hours of coverage. They were happy with the photos. They loved them. And then I was going through my hard drives this past week, and one of the things that I do is I go through, and if the client is super happy with all their photos, I delete all the photos that I did not deliver. All the ones that weren't good enough to deliver, I go through and I delete those because I need the hard drive space and I don't want to hang on to thousands of photos that weren't even good anyways. So I sent them a message and I said, hey, I just wanted to check in with you guys, make sure you guys are happy with everything and, you know, just make sure everything's good. And they said, well, yeah, actually, we're still waiting for the rest of the photos. And I was like, but I delivered the photos. I delivered 474. And he said, yeah, but we know you took more than that and we want the rest of them. And I was like, well, I don't really want to give you the rest of them because I went through, I sifted through, I picked the best ones, I edited those and I delivered those. And that's kind of how it normally works. And they were just so upset because I wasn't going to give them every single photo, which would have been 3,700 photos. Through a little bit of back and forth, I finally threw up my hands and I said, you know what? Fine. I uploaded 3,700 photos into Pass. And I said, well, have fun sifting through that. I'm not going to edit these. A lot of these are just like the exact same shot over and over and over, because when I have a big group or something, I take, you know, 10 photos of that to make sure that I've got one photo in there that has everybody's eyes open, everybody's smiling. And that's just kind of how I work. And I go through and I select the best. And so when we were talking about this, the reason I'm not okay with delivering all those other photos is because there's a lot of photos in there that are, you know, underexposed, or they're slightly out of focus. I missed focus, or people's eyes were closed, or it wasn't flattering. And there's just lots of like quality issues. I think Majid said it best when he said that you have to really be careful about the photos that you put out into the wild, because you know that that one really bad photo is going to be the one that they share on social media and then put my name on, and everybody sees that photo and says, oh, well, this is what Nick Page's work looks like. Some unedited, out of focus, terrible shot. So to me, it's like a quality control issue, because I need to have my stuff decent. I want to make sure that I'm putting my best foot forward, because that's where my future clients come from, is from the quality of my work. So I guess that's where I'm coming from.
Okay. I'm trying to think of a worthwhile analogy, and I found one that's completely unfair, but it kind of gets my point across a little bit. It's like if you go and you're in the pet store, and your child's looking through all of the animals, trying to choose what his next best friend is going to be. He finds this little puppy in the back in one of the little kennels, and he just loves this puppy, falls in love with this puppy. He wants the puppy, and the store owner goes, no, no, no. I'm a breeder and that's not my best work. You can't have it. And you say, no, I'm your customer. I want to pay you for it. And he's like, no, no, no. I wouldn't want anybody to know that I was the one that raised that puppy, but I like it. And that's kind of the situation, is like, this is the client. I'm a big believer in the client is always right. You know, the customer's always right. And the things that a photographer looks for is not what the client looks for. We've all been through the situation of giving the photos to the client, and the one that they choose to print big, you kind of scratch your head and said, really? That's the one? It's because they are looking for different things. you know, they're self-conscious about a mole on their cheek and they love that that one doesn't show it. Or they're self-conscious about their hips and it looks slim on them. And you're like, well, I don't know. I think you look fine. They're looking at their kid and, you know, it may not be the best picture in the world, but it shows that one little innocent face that they make that you love the most. And that's what you want to put on your wall. You know, you fall in love with the photo for a lot of different reasons than the artsy fartsy photographer. Well, I don't care what you puppy breeder think of this dog. It's the one that I love and I want it and I want to pay for it. And so I think it's just part of serving the client well is to give them the things that they want to pay you for. And then they're going to be happy. Maybe it won't represent your photography as well because they picked the photo that you don't like as much. But maybe it's going to do even better for you because then they're going to go raving to all their friends because they did get the puppy that they liked. Was the puppy thing just completely ridiculous? It was kind of ridiculous. There are a lot of holes in that. I know it's not the same, but
let me just say
everybody
this.
Wants to nail a puppy on their
let
wall.
Let me say
okay?
this. We're not talking puppies here. We're talking art. We're talking a product. And you know, if you have a factory that makes batteries, you're not going to put out into the world a battery that is leaking or is spilling battery acid all over people.
But these photos aren't dangerous and it's not a commodity. This is artistic and it's something that people do have a preference. Nobody has a preference that says, man, I want a leaky battery.
It's true. But
a lot of people have a preference for a different photo.
It is a product that has your name plastered all over it. It's basically every photo comes with a picture of my face up in the corner. And if that photo sucks, people are going to think Nick Page sucks. And I can't let that happen, Jim. Like my entire livelihood, feeding my children is based off not sucking. And so I cannot let those photos that suck out into the world. Otherwise, everybody's going to think I suck and then I won't be able to feed my children anymore. So,
I get that. And I want Zane good and fed, believe me. But also, your livelihood depends on referrals. I mean, aren't most of your clients coming from referrals? And so the customer is right kind of attitude, I think, makes a big, big difference there.
It's true.
Well, so I want to present an option. This is the way that I always deliver photos. And I don't do this nearly as often as you do, you know, shooting weddings and other things. So you have much more experience with this than I do. But the way that I always do it is when I deliver the photos to the client, I upload them online. I usually just use Dropbox and I'll send them, but it sounds like Pass is better, whatever it is you're going to use. And I'll send a folder that's called Best Pictures, and that'll have, you know, these are the ones that Jim Harmer is proud of, stamp of approval. Then it'll have another folder that just says Good Folder. So Best Folder, Best Photos, Good Photos, and that's going to be almost everything. And I send that to the client. It has a bunch of photos in there. They get almost everything. And then after a couple days, usually I'll wait and I'll say, hey, I want to make sure you got the fire hose of everything. Here are the raw files. Here are the photos of my feet. Here's everything. If you want anything in there, it's there. And nobody ever even looks at that folder. Right. But you know what? They like knowing that it's there. And they like knowing that I got every little drop that I paid for, even if it is photos of Jim's shoe.
And I can understand why they like that. But the problem is, like, am I going to go through and delete all the photos of my feet and of the wall and, you know, the ones where I'm getting my exposure right? And then am I going to edit the 2,000, the 2,500 others?
No, because, I don't. Right. I only edit the best photos.
Right. And so I don't want an unedited photo, an unstylized photo going out with my name on it.
Well, I just put a Lightroom preset on all of them. So yeah, it's just a general, you know, looks fine. But it's not, you know, not like I haven't gone through and applied styles to everyone.
Yeah. It's a tough one because there's definitely two sides to this story. My side just happens to be right.
Well, it's a good debate. And I thought it's one that we wanted to bring on to the podcast here because I think it's something that most photographers have to choose. Well, in just the last couple minutes here, we've gone on a little bit too long already. We want to give you the doodads of the week. And this week, I want to share with you the Avenger wall stud. This probably won't apply to everyone, but if you are setting up a studio in your home, it's usually not in as big of a space as you'd like it to be. The photographer always gets pushed into the basement and the spare bedroom and stuff because you don't shoot all the time. But if you want to set up a studio in your room, I can highly recommend the Avenger wall stud. It's only 10 bucks, and you just basically screw this wall stud onto the wall, and then you can hook up your softbox, your constant light, whatever it is, your studio lights to this wall stud, and then your lights are mounted to the wall. And the only reason that I like this one specifically, it is rock solid and only 10 bucks. I mean, it is, I really do think I could hang from it and not pull it off the wall. It's really solid. And so the advantage of doing this is you're not tripping over light stands all the time. As soon as you set up light stands in a room, it feels like you're squished into a submarine. So having the lights on the wall makes a big difference. So if you're interested in setting up a home studio, highly recommend the Avenger wall stud.
Mine this week is going to be the Sigma 50mm f1.4 art lens. I just got Annalise this lens for Christmas and I succeeded. She's very happy. That what's so cool about this lens is it's built amazing. The build quality is like better than an L lens kind of quality. It's like Carl Zeiss type quality. It is razor sharp. It's the sharpest 50mm you can get pretty much. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful lens. It blows away the Canon 50mm, and it's like quite a bit cheaper than the L version. So the Sigma 50mm art lens, it's pretty awesome.
Very cool. Is that the one that has like the little LCD panel on the top?
No, it doesn't have an LCD panel, but you can make micro adjustments and stuff using the USB dock and stuff on it. It's a really awesome lens.
Very cool. Well, thank you for joining us in this episode of the Improved Photography Podcast. We really appreciate your support. I will warn or let you know that the artwork for the Improved Photography Podcast, as well as our theme song and some other things, will be changing in the next couple of weeks. So look out for it. There will be a couple changes. Don't like miss it in your podcatcher because the artwork will have changed. And so thank you for joining us in this episode, and we will see you in another 7 days. Merry Christmas.